Episode 127 of the TV Dudes podcast, recorded April 6th, 2017. Back from the dead. Guys, I have been watching so much TV in the past 2 weeks. It's kind of gross.
Same. I started thinking today, as I was wrapping up 13 Reasons Why, just how much cumulative television that means I've watched in the last few days, and it's not okay. I had to stop thinking about it.
Like, yeah. Do you track everything you're watching?
I can't. I'll get sad.
See, I have to track everything I'm watching because I'm kind of crazy about that. But I have not been watching. I actually sort of tried to binge in 2 days. I am, for the first time in a while, I am behind while you guys are ahead of me. I have not seen all 13 Reasons Why yet.
Like, I've been keeping track since the beginning of the year, everything I've watched. And this week, I watched all of 13 Reasons Why. I caught up on like 3 episodes of Making History. I did a couple episodes of Luke Cage, still trying to crawl back on that. Some Crashing, some American, some Catastrophe. I watched all of Catastrophe season 3.
Oh, wow.
Prison Break, 3 episodes of The Mick, and I watched the season finale of Always Sunny. Not to mention, I watched like 3 different movies, and I'm listening to all these podcasts. I'm like, I'm consuming a bit too much right now.
You're a media whore.
I am.
Yeah, but it's like you've done the TV Dudes homework, but also you did all the extra credit.
I did, yeah. Because I watched Prison Break, and we were not initially going to talk about that.
You're going to get a gold star, and you should for watching Prison Break.
Yes!
I did the binge catch-up on Making History as well, and I know I watched an assortment of other things that I follow that we don't necessarily talk about, but now I'm thinking, well, that I should track all this stuff so that I can see what all I watched, but I know it's going to look far too much like a personal inventory from an addiction course.
Given like the random shows you're like, oh yeah, I just finished this one and this one last weekend too, I'm like, holy shit, Les, you watch a lot of stuff.
See, yeah. I keep track of my comics reading alongside it, and my comics reading, it looks makes my TV addiction look like nothing.
Yeah. Well, you have a comic book store.
I know, so it's all work.
Where's that comic book store?
Oh, you mean Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas?
Yeah, if you say so. Yeah. I've never been there. Is it nice?
You have to.
All right, guys. Well, we are going to be talking about a bunch of characters in TV shows that have come back from the dead in one way or the other. And so that's the title of our episode. But we're going to be discussing Prison Break, Rick and Morty's surprise premiere, April Fool's prank or whatever, Making History, iZombie, and 13 Reasons Why over on Netflix. But before we get all that, we are the TV Dudes. I'm Grant.
I'm Randy.
I'm Les.
And iTunes. If you guys want to support us, if you guys like what you're hearing, and you haven't turned it off yet, so I'm thinking you might, there's a way you guys can actually support us. Go to iTunes and give us a 5-star rating, write a review. That helps us gain visibility, and we'll read your reviews here on the show. Another way to help us out, patreon.com/TV Dudes. Go there, you make a per episode pledge, and in exchange, you get bonus exclusive content. Win-win.
So, this, Grant.
Yeah. No, I'm moving on.
No, you forgot the third way you can think of promote us.
All right. So I always forget this.
Not actually sure if the technology is still easily available, because I know they stopped making VHSs, but if you want, you could take a page from 13 Reasons Why, a thematic TV tie-in. Don't kill yourself. Don't do that part. But you could make a tape for us as you listen to each episode, and then send us those tapes and make us listen to the tapes as to your thoughts and reactions to every one podcast that we've done.
Now, will we actually listen to those tapes?
That's not important.
The effort is what's important, yeah. Guys.
We may put them up as bonus episodes. That way, we don't have to record that week.
Oh, man. If you guys want to go ahead and make your own Patreon
audio. Now, I have this mental image of like somebody sweeting all of our podcasts, like
just reenacting audio in visual form. Like, what does it look like?
Like when they took that Rick and Morty and put in when the Rick and Morty voices did all the audio for that court case that went off the rails.
That was so good.
Yeah, if you wanted to say blend our audio with a TV episode, you know, you could do that.
That's madness.
It's like a podcast green screen challenge.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's another way you guys can support us, and we appreciate all of your support. Hey, if you guys also want to support our fellow podcasts on the Permanent Record Podcast Network.
Permanent Record.
This month, we are supporting Pilot Watching with Key and Clyde. Every week or so, Key and Clyde sit down to talk about a different pilot that they've been checking out. And they give their review as a cute little couple that they are. And you guys can check them out at pilotwatching.com or go ahead and pop over to permanentrcrd.com and check it out.
Permanentrcrd.com.
You guys are ridiculous.
That is never going to not be funny to me.
No,
all right. If you guys like us on Facebook, once a week we put up questions, posts, and you guys can give us all the questions you want us to answer or anything else you want to discuss. And speaking of things you want to discuss, we have a continuing saga from our good buddy Nick Thies over at the UGO podcast, who's got a Game of Thrones revenge update for us. He says, "Just wanted to let you know the prank ceasefire is still in place. Things definitely did not escalate at all. No one got poisoned thanks to Grant's advice. No, sir. On a completely unrelated note, what are some of the best TV examples of getting rid of a body? The more accurate, the better. Not that I need to hide a body or anything. The question isn't even for me. My roommate wants to know because he is definitely not dead and hidden in the trunk, my trunk right now. I cannot stress that enough. I have seen Dexter, so storage is not an issue. It's the disposal part that I'm curious about." I mean, my friend, he's curious about it. Anyway, any answers would be appreciated. Hashtag accessories after the fact.
This is all going to be a whole lot less funny when it's revealed to be like that Eminem song with the...
Stan.
Yeah. Stan. He's standing us all.
He's actually doing this. It's not a joke.
But, he stole the best answer. Dexter's a great answer of how to get rid of bodies, although didn't turn out for him in the end.
I mean, chopping it up and dumping in a river, that's rough.
I feel like that. Well, and it's, you're going to get it discovered later. Like, I mean, they come across the whole like reef of dead body bags in Dexter, right?
The Bay Area butcher.
I mean, other than Jesse not listening and putting the chemical in the wrong tub material, I feel like Breaking Bad was a pretty spectacular body disposal.
Right? Just liquefy
him. Walt really came up with a great one, and I will never forget him walking in and going, "You put it in the tub? No." And yeah, about that time, the whole...
That was amazing.
Yeah. Weekend at Bernie's is another great option.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Yes. That's actually how they're getting Steve Bannon through the administration right now. A lot of people don't know that.
Just you're the puppet.
Also, not necessarily disposal, but the Americans has had some memorable body movie. Remember they put the one in the suitcase?
Oh, yeah. Bury a body next to another body,
yep.
I guess.
Yep. They've done a bit of that.
Yeah.
Folding up the eye. Legion.
Yeah.
That was a disturbing body.
Yes, that was
fucked up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ugh. All right, next question comes to us from Dennis McElwain, who says, and this is a little bit of a preview for a news story we're going to discuss. With Seth Rogen doing Invincible for Universal.
Spoilers for news, Dennis.
How disappointed are you that it was not made into an animated TV series?
Oh, okay, that part.
And then he says, as a side note... I think Seth Rogen would be perfect voicing Alan the Alien.
I love that Les's reaction was mostly mine. It was that was what was disappointing was that Seth Rogen, that the guys who made Preacher are making it.
Yeah.
Because they didn't knock it out of the park.
I'm willing to give Preacher season 2 a chance, but same? Seth Rogen no longer has my he might do good. I don't know. No, I don't know.
Yeah. I do think the weird thing about Invincible as a movie, I think you need the budget to do it as a movie. It makes sense to doing it as a movie, but... it's the biggest thing about Invincible is it can.
You mean as a TV series?
No, it's a movie.
Are they doing it as a movie?
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're doing it as a movie.
Ah.
And that's the thing. It's like, it's not a story that's going to be told in 2 hours.
No, that's my issue. I think you're right. You need the budget from a movie, but that's way longer of a story. You're not going to get the beautiful twist reveal.
Unless they just can do a father and son story.
Which is why Dennis is right. The perfect thing to do would have been to do an adult in animated series like for HBO or something like that. HBO probably got a little gun shy after Spawn. It's been like 20, 25 years and they're still probably like, you know what? No more of that. No more of that shit. But Seth Rogen would be a good Alan the Alien. He's right about that. Who would you cast for Invincible though? Who's a younger guy? Maybe the lead from 13 Reasons Why?
The young kid?
Young Clay? Yeah, Clay.
I feel like he's too doe-eyed.
You don't think Invincible's a little doe-eyed?
He's got a little bit more swagger.
Okay. So who'd you cast?
I don't know teenagers.
I know.
I guess. Do I have to cast someone?
Yes, right now.
My nephew.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. Grant's nephew for Invincible.
The kid playing Archie.
Yeah.
Without the fake dye hair.
Plus, you got any relatives you want to cast for Adam Eve? Or I guess that's the thing we're doing now.
No.
Archie's too buff, isn't he?
For animation?
Live action.
No, for live action, yeah.
He's just so ripped.
But yeah, no, like the whole first episode thing of like Archie got abs over the summer. He's Archie. What the hell?
No. Michael Gustini says, do you dudes have any special rituals in regards to certain shows? For example, I only watch The 100 on Friday nights with my sister while eating pizza. Watching it any other way just seems wrong.
I only watch Legends of Tomorrow during daylight hours. That show cannot hold up to dark at all. In fact, preferably on a Saturday morning, the earlier the better. And I actually try to flip to YouTube and watch the old interstitials. It really helps it out, I think.
I watch most of my shows on my iPhone with my earbuds in, where I can do it where the kids won't hear me and I can hide.
I only watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. when I feel like crying. Is that a ritual?
Yeah, that works. Ross Brown says, thinking about the McDonald's Mulan sauce from Rick and Morty.
We all are.
If you guys haven't seen the episode of Rick and Morty, there is a joke about the Szechuan sauce from McDonald's from
9 seasons and 97 years.
Yeah, from back when they were promoting Mulan, the animated feature. Is there any discontinued food you would want to bring back?
So I have an answer for this, but first I would like to tell you all a McNuggets story.
Okay.
God. I have not been to McDonald's for probably 3 years.
Yeah.
Just don't go. It's kind of gross.
I haven't been in 20.
I had McDonald's McNuggets for lunch this week. Because, God damn it, Rick and Morty wanted to have McNuggets. They put it in my head. There was something in that show. And I've never tasted the Szechuan sauce. I never had it.
McNuggets aren't good,
but
dude.
Now I want the Szechuan. I am aware they're not good. I had them this week.
Those weird boot-shaped. They're so gross. Yeah, they're so gross.
They're terrible. And I don't know why I wanted them. But I did. And I want Szechuan sauce that I've never tasted before. I think there was something subliminal in the Rick and Morty, or I'm very susceptible to advertising.
Well, what would you want resurrected?
What I want resurrected are chocodiles.
What are
chocodiles?
You know
I know what you're talking about. I don't think I've ever actually had one.
They are Twinkies covered in chocolate.
All right.
They were amazing. That was my favorite snack food. The other thing I want back is Ecto Cooler, which I got.
Yeah. Nice. That Ecto Cooler in a can? Yeah. It's even better in a can, too.
It is.
Just slam one of those and then just feel guilty afterwards.
It doesn't taste as nostalgic without a juice box straw, though.
I guess.
Yeah.
I had one the other day, and I was like, too. So good.
Yeah.
There was a particular brand of cherry sours that they used to sell at the movie theater when I was a kid, and the no-name cherry sours now are just not the same, or I'm an adult. I don't know.
No, I know exactly what you're talking about, because I remember, and I loved those.
And now there's something, I don't know, they got a better fake cherry chemical or something, and it's different.
And
now.
It wasn't just cherry, because they had lemon and a couple other flavors, too.
Yeah, my small town didn't.
They were way better than any of the ones.
Throw them in popcorn, they were rad, but yeah.
And the other thing, New York Seltzer, which I used to drink when I was in high school, they just brought that back too. So Chocodile should come back. And here's the thing. McDonald's is talking about bringing back the Szechuan sauce.
I was actually going to ask somebody, does that really exist? Is this a
it's a thing.
Mandela effect? Is this like Shazam?
Apparently it was a thing.
Or Kazaa or whatever.
You know, now that they're making all those live animated, live action reboots of these movies, they're doing one for Mulan.
Yep.
Perfect timing for them to bring it back.
Yes, it would be. Yep.
Yeah. I don't have anything in particular. I mean, Jack in the Box tacos still exist from back in the day, and I eat way too many of those.
Were you judging me for eating McNuggets?
I was. And I welcome all the judgment I receive for eating those Jack in the Box tacos. But
you will get some,
sir. I can't stop.
I assume they just made 1 year of those, and they're still working through the backlog. Like, they produced 1 year of taco in 83.
And I don't know, Dunkaroos? I don't really have anything in particular I'm wanting. Next question comes to us from... Alec Miracle asks if we're going to talk about Prison Break. Yes, I am going to talk about it. Ulysses Carmona says, after finishing the amazing first season of Legion, it might be the best first season ever. I decided to rewatch the entire season to evaluate it as a whole, but I created a drinking game out of it. The game was that I take a drink every time there's a change in aspect ratio after the first episode. I had to stop and decided it was a really bad idea. On to my question. Can you think of a drinking game for a series that you love?
Grant, I think I'm just going to give you your series.
Okay.
What is the drinking game for Lost?
Every time they introduce a plot thread.
Oh my God, no.
Every new mystery, take a drink. I was going to say, watch Mad Men. Every time someone else takes a drink,
you take a drink.
I stopped watching Mad Men. I've still never finished that series because I quit smoking while watching that show. And I just had to stop. I just could not do it.
Maybe Hannibal, every time something comes on that you think you want to eat that you're pretty sure is people, you take a drink.
Just judging yourself.
Yes.
Am I a cannibal?
I need a drink. I think I'm a cannibal.
Zach McLernan says, with TV upfronts coming in a month from now, what are your hopes for shows that may be on the fence right now to survive? And who do you hope gets sacrificed to the Lord of Light? For the night is dark and full of terrors, gentlemen. To the light of the TV universe.
The only thing that I really am kind of wondering about is Pitch, which abruptly had no more episodes ordered. And I believe some of the actors have moved on to their shows. I am almost certain I know where that's going, and it's going into cancellation. But they haven't officially canceled it, and I kind of hope that they bring it back, because I liked Pitch.
I'm liking The Mick. I haven't paid attention to whether or not that's going to get picked up. But
same.
I think it's pretty fun. And
yeah, that's a good sitcom. I mean, it's a sitcom. It's not trying to be prestige television or anything, but it's good at it.
I need to catch that one. That's been on my radar. Just the other one is Trial and Error. They're burning it off 2 episodes a week, and I'm not sure if they're gonna keep it or not. But the ratings have been solid, and I really like it.
That is a much on your recommendation. That's a much better show than I expected it to be. Yeah. I'm enjoying Trial and Error.
It's great. I did not expect much out of it either.
Last question comes to us from Marvin A. Lanier, who says, not sure if I am too late with this question. You're not, by the way, obviously. But now that Rick and Morty have reset themselves, are you guys as happy as I am about leaving intact the mysteries of the show? He says, I think it would have been a mistake to start answering those lingering questions this early.
I think what he's talking about here is that sort of reveal of Rick's origin that turned out not to be Rick's origin in this episode. And if that's what he's talking about, then yeah, I have the same right. I was like, this is interesting, and it sort of throws a new shade on Rick and changes the character, but I was glad when it was revealed not to be the case.
Yeah. He made that whole thing up. Yeah.
Plus, they've kind of dropped back into a bit of the formula of the show, that it's an episodic adventure of the week, or at least where they leave off, it allows for that.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And if that's the case, and I'm sorry if that's a spoiler for anyone who hasn't seen it, then they don't have to really kind of drive home this season answering a lot of those other bigger questions.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it would have fallen into a trap if Rick and Morty had come back and started trying to deal with these spectacular questions that they've raised.
Right.
Because the show's a lot more fun when it just blasé wanders past them with Rick goes, I don't care about answering that, and moves on.
Or you kind of get a little bit more of it through a throwaway line or whatever.
Yeah. But ultimately, it's got to be cynical and dark and funny, and you can't go just one way or the other.
That's the way I need it.
Yeah. So we got some news this week. A lot of comic-related news. It's kind of funny. I think I've talked about a lot of this stuff over on my Roguecast for the store because it's all crossing over.
I'm going to have to bleep that out. We don't do cross-promotion.
Yes, we
that.
Do. We promote my store. Rogues Gallery Comics and Games, Round Rock, Texas.
Rogues Gallery.
Rogues Gallery. Grant, you've done promotion for my store.
You guys want to see a commercial? You know what's funny about... Okay, so... Quick side note, I did a little commercial along with our friend Jason Murphy for Rogues Gallery Comics and Games, where I'm sexy dancing on the hood of a car, recreating a Whitesnake video.
Yep.
And
I have seen this, yeah.
a few weeks back, I went to your store and I started doing some teases. I did one where I did a video and I timed it some music that was like a throwback to the video from like 5 years ago.
Yep.
And then I did another one showing my butt in those little shorts again. Yep. And I sent them just to you and Jason mainly.
I know.
I had no follow through.
I know. I've been waiting for the follow through.
It was just me trolling, I guess.
It was as if they like announced the X-Files reboot and then they didn't make it. It's very disappointing.
I said coming soon and there's nothing coming soon.
By the way, made a commercial implies that I in some way asked you to do it. You and Jason took it upon yourselves.
Jason took it upon himself and then said, "Hey Grant, you don't mind embarrassing yourself." I was like, "You're correct about that, sir. I do not."
I mean, I do love it. And it is, if someone searches Rogues Gallery on YouTube, it's like the first thing that comes up. So,
yep.
Yeah. Anyway, comic related TV news.
Yes.
So, Cloak and Dagger's being done at Freeform. You knew that already. Well, Freeform has just ordered a second Marvel TV show straight to series. They're ordering New Warriors.
And if you guys forgot what Freeform is, it's ABC Family, rebranded.
So this is going to be a comedy, and it's going to include fan favorite Squirrel Girl. I'm a huge fan of New Warriors, and I'm a little disturbed to see them turn into basically comedy fodder. But I like Squirrel Girl, who is a great comedy character. And this is being run by former Scrubs writer and Cougar Town co-creator Kevin Beagle.
Oh, Austin, an Austin local. And he used to work for Ain't It Cool News.
Too. Indeed. So I like that guy. And if he's doing it, this is a guy who he's got some nerd cred.
Mm-hmm.
And I like his sense of humor. So I think this could be really fun.
I'm thrilled to see Squirrel Girl on screen in any form. So this will be cool. I'll be interested to see who casts. But I really want to know what Freeform's tone on comic shows. That's been a huge thing. I mean, Netflix has one very distinct tone for all of their series. And CBS established a tone that flopped with Supergirl. And then it moved over to the CW, who have established a tone that works with their shows.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of interested to see what Freeform's comic book shows look like.
Well, hopefully they don't follow ABC's model.
Yes. Yeah. Let's lean more towards Legion or CW.
Well, they're describing it as YA. So I'm going to guess...
Let's go towards CW.
I'm going to guess CW, but more comedic.
But I've really enjoyed some ABC Family shows. I haven't watched a lot since it's rebranded to Freeform, but
ABC has pretty strong comedy chops, and there was a time when they had the best comedy on TV. I was waxing nostalgic with a few people today about
Big Bang Theory still airing, Randy.
No, and that's CBS, and fuck you. they had Trophy Wife, Suburgatory, Modern Family all at the same time, and that was a good little lineup.
Yeah, it was.
And so I think that ABC could pull this off. They can do family comedy well. On the other end of the spectrum, Sci-Fi is officially going forward with their Purge TV series.
It sounds so fucked up.
I like the Purge movies. Have you guys seen the Peter Purge movies at all?
Nope. They're dark, though, but...
Yeah. Oh, really? I haven't seen them?
No, I mean, I got the premise.
Because I thought it looked like shit. And it's actually, I really like it. I really like The Purge. It's got some interesting things about politics, especially as it went on.
Yeah.
And so they're doing sort of an interwoven anthology about sort of the people and who are like going through Purge night. And the show creator, who is, I believe, one of the guys who did the movie. Purge director James DeMonaco is also running the show and overseeing the writer's room. And he said that he kind of liked the idea of maybe 10-hour thing like this. You can get the nuance and complexity of what would drive someone to commit a terrible act on this night. And I'm curious to see. So he's like, let's show everything led up to this moment of a husband trying to kill his wife, the cheating or the accusations of cheating or money problems. Interesting to show those arcs. I think that's something cool we can do with the real estate of TV.
So what's the bet? That they're going to intersperse the entire series Damages style with open each episode with a flash of a few minutes from the Purge night and then cut back to so you spend the whole season watching this dude get to the point of killing his wife on Purge night?
I think it's not going to be one person. I think it's going to be more of a every episode we see one person. We see a bit of flash of Purge night, other people interacting, and we slowly Lost style flashback and see what people were doing. Like, I don't think it'll be one person at a time. I think it'll be a... ensemble cast, they'll interact, and then maybe you'll later go. That's how I would do it.
So you see the reasons why everybody does the act that they do on Purge.
So, like, you know, you see a bunch of people come together, maybe some guy rescues a couple people from, rampaging purgers, And then three episodes later, we find out what that guy's doing out there and that there was something else going on. Yeah.
I would love a massively interconnected thing like the Trick or Treat movie or something where, you know, through the whole season, you keep constantly going, oh, it's the guy from episode 5 running through the background on fire or something, you know?
I mean, they could do a whole, like, Walking Dead style or maybe more like 24. But, like, it's 13 episodes, 13 hours of The Purge, like, overnight through the morning. Yeah,
I would recommend The Purge, by the way, Les. Cool. I think you would like it. So.
Yeah.
You didn't like it?
I didn't finish it. I just went, the whole thing is just.
I liked it, and I thought the second movie was actually better.
Oh.
They definitely changed up a little bit. Anyway, I'm excited about that. This was news that surprised me. Rainn Wilson is going to be on Star Trek Discovery. He is playing Roger Mudd, the sort of con man of space who was in the original series.
Mm-hmm. Now, did you guys remember Roger Mudd?
Yeah.
I didn't.
He looks like a walrus.
You know, I have a friend, Dave, who does a podcast called Text Trek. I'm just promoting another podcast all over. There's nothing you can do about it.
What are you doing?
And I thought he would be against this whole thing of like bringing in an older character for Discovery. But Roger Mudd is the only character who recurred in the original series. The only guest character who was in more than one episode. Hmm. And he's like a space con man.
So this takes place before.
This takes place before.
The original series. He's going to be a younger version of that guy.
Yeah. So
Who all is cast in this thing now? Is Idris Elba? Was he?
No, but he probably will be because everybody else has been cast in it so far.
Yeah. I mean, because after Brian Fuller leaving, I really stopped paying attention to this show. To news about it.
I'm still hoping it could be good. There's a lot of good cast in it. There's some interesting ideas.
But I like this casting news. I'm more interested now.
Well, and one of the things that Dave said that many mentioned I thought was a good point was that Star Trek can be a little dull. And so if you've got a guy who's a little larger in life, a little bit comedic, that could really liven up the show. So,
yeah.
So I think that's probably a good thing. And of course, you know, Rainn Wilson will probably be as good as he was in Backstrom.
Hey, I enjoyed Backstrom.
Did you really?
Yeah.
You were that guy. Oh. Okay, cool.
I'm the one that watched all of Backstrom.
So Jordan Klepper is getting a Daily Show spinoff.
Yeah.
I don't enjoy Jordan Klepper.
Really? I like Jordan Klepper, but he's like not the guy I would give in a spinoff to.
No. Someone punch him in the face seems like a long 30-minute episode.
he's doing a spinoff show that I don't know if they give us a title for it. I don't think they've given us a title yet. But
TV is lacking smarmy white guys. So
yeah. They say it will look to embrace and define the chaos of our country by channeling Klepper's steadfast attitude that institutions are to be trusted less than the lies of the mainstream media. He'll surround himself with a handpicked team of contributors contractually obligated to reinforce his singularly correct worldview. So it sounds like they're going a little Colbert with it. And the problem is, he's not Colbert. I like Jordan Klepper.
No, but I could see him doing a really iconoclastic, I'm sticking with my point and all of you are wrong. Like, that's definitely in his wheelhouse.
That's the thing he could do. I don't know. I don't really care. I'm not watching Daily Show either.
I mean, sometimes it's surprising to me, like, who takes off and who doesn't.
Yeah.
Like, when Samantha Bee all of a sudden jumped out of her show and was like, whoa, you're awesome. I like you so much more than I liked you on Daily Show. And I thought she was okay on Daily Show.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But she's great now.
Yeah. I always loved Samantha Bee, so I was happy to see her.
I had no idea how good John Oliver was.
Until When he took over the Daily Show, But yeah,
Colbert was like a bit of a mixed bag because you're like, can you just play a character? What are you when you're serious?
Right.
I'm not sure.
So we got some ratings news from Netflix. You know, Netflix doesn't share their numbers that much.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently...
But for some reason,
they wanted people to know this one. I guess Seven Park Data actually got it out there. But the headline here is, Iron Fist was Netflix's most binge drama premiere for some reason.
Now, didn't Luke Cage actually break Netflix for a second? Like,
Yes, it did.
It crashed for a minute.
So... Here's the info.
They didn't
is
have to release that news.
Iron Fist accounted for at least 14.6 of all Netflix streams on its premiere day, topping 12.8 for Luke Cage and 13.8 for Daredevil Season 2.
Now, it's almost like people were excited for it to be good.
Yeah.
I am grossly in the minority on this, but I really enjoyed Iron Fist and made it all the way through that faster than I did Luke Cage.
Really?
Yeah.
Wait, you enjoyed it? Like, yeah. The whole thing?
I watched it straight through and really had no problem with it. I liked Iron Fist. But I am alone in this, so I don't bring it up much because it gets me run out of town on rails.
The views of Les do not reflect the views of the TV dudes.
Yeah, I'm just going to go ahead and mute his mic for the rest of the episode. I feel we're safe.
No, I was super happy, though, that the rest of the internet's cumulative 2 years each of Taekwondo weighed in on the fight scenes for me because I thought they were okay, and then I found out that I was totally wrong, and I rewatched the show and went, you're right, this is not good. What was I thinking, Les?
I'm glad you realized.
No, I didn't. I was kidding. That's fucking great. I really don't
I know
this.
I know your sarcasm.
All right, final news, and this is really interesting. Non-binary billion star Asia Kate Dillon basically was, when submitting for the Emmys, basically was she wrote a letter to, or they, sorry, they wrote a letter to the Television Academy saying, so what do I submit as, actor, actress? And to their credit, the TV Academy got back right away and said, choose the category. Anyone can submit either category for any reason. There are no specific gender for qualifications for either. The billion star said, I found them to be 100% supportive. I really couldn't have been happier, and chose to submit under supporting actor, preferring the non-gender word to actress. So this is interesting. I have a bit of a personal stake in this because my daughter is non-binary, and I'm still wrapping my head around that whole thing.
Yeah.
And so I was really glad to see this character because it sort of is a representation for something that I had never even heard of, and I think of myself as fairly informed, but I didn't really know much about this.
Well, I think it's constantly like evolving and coming into the mainstream kind of conversation.
Yeah,
and yeah, it's so interesting that we have these two distinct categories for male actor and female actress, even though the proper nomenclature, I believe, for all is actor.
Yeah.
Now, but we still have these two distinct categories, and for them to be like, yeah, we actually don't require that be gender specific.
Yeah.
For any particular purpose, and so you can submit to either one. I think that's a very open-minded approach to something that could have otherwise been one of those. How did you react?
Could
to
have
that?
Been an outrage.
Yeah,
story.
I feel like most of the time these stories go wrong. And you kind of expected it to. And so that they got back quick and that they got back pretty good. I mean, I'd like them to go even further and not have a prom king queen category that makes you choose one, like just have best, then stop having the actress category.
The only issue with that, I was talking about this with Grant a little bit before we got on mic, is that you know that if they got rid of the categories and if it was just best actor, suddenly we'd be 10 white guys.
It would just stop. Guys. This is definitely one of those things where you have to force an actress category, or we would go years without nominating a woman.
Yeah. Or, well, maybe not. Maybe they'd be smarter than that.
I mean, I think like trying to gauge performances, there's still this bias, gender bias that you see. I mean, regardless, it could be you have a couple women in there. You have a couple men all competing, and you would see how one plays a particular role that is slanted toward a particular gender, and that gives them bias or what. Mm-hmm. Like, the whole thing is like weird. Well, yeah,
a huge number of roles in television and film, I mean, unless they're just spectacular writing, are still rooted in tropes, and the entire point of not wanting to choose actor or choose a standard gender pronoun or gender role is giving up a trope.
Yeah.
So you're going to end up with woman roles and men roles in anything that's not just spectacularly well written.
Yeah.
That are going to lazily pull from those categories.
Here's a question. Aubrey Plaza. The role she's playing in Legion is gender ambiguous. I mean, she's a woman, but she's playing first of all, it was created as a male character, and the character that she is playing is Lenny. Also the Shadow King.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Should she submit as best actor?
Supporting. I mean, do you think she could submit either way? Like, was the performance
well,
that good?
I mean,
I guess she could.
Yeah, absolutely. I think she could. But, I mean, people submit. But the question is, given this new thing, that, I mean, technically under the rules, she could.
Well, what? Here would be my problem. She identifies as female.
True.
Like, normally.
Yeah.
And I feel like that would be kind of running over this issue that Asia is kind of actually being accepted to kind of
enter any category, and all of a sudden a bunch of women enter into the male category, that kind of screws it over for Asia.
Yeah. I agree, and now you're seeing the potential problem, and that's what I'm like, I think
I just say give it a few years of this, and then make that another shift.
I'm waiting to see if someone's going to jump on this and be like, well, I want to be considered in the actor category too, and I hope no one does. I don't think I'll be Plaza would, but I could see someone making the argument because it's Hollywood. People are shallow.
Given it's Aubrey Plaza, she might.
Yeah, but it's Hollywood, and it's an easy way to give your agent to be like, look, submit as an actor because this is going to get eyeballs on you and talked about. And even if it's controversial, you'll be more aware, and that awareness campaign means you might get the award.
Shit, dude, I'm gonna submit to some sort of category.
What did Tambor win for? Actor or actress?
Oh, that's a good question. Actor. He went for actor. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Which rightly so, because I don't think Jeffrey Tambor is personally going through a transition. Whereas this actor,
that's actor,
actually is, I agree with Grant. Yeah. Like, this is a non-binary person, playing a non-binary character, but but like would.
But it's not so much the character so much as the individual.
Yeah, in so I feel. Yeah. Is it Ruby Rose? Is that her name from Orange is the New Black?
Yeah.
And I'm not sure what pronoun she prefers or how she identifies.
I think she.
She. But I would be curious. I didn't think her performance in Orange is the New Black was going to get her an award, but maybe someday, and I would be interested then to see if they react as well.
Yeah. I don't know. It's an interesting question, and I'm glad to see, like I said, like you guys said, this thing kind of stuff always goes wrong, and I'm glad to see the TV Academy got it right.
Exactly. So we got a whole bunch of shows where characters are back from the dead.
In one way or another.
Yes. And, you know, this was one that we were not going to discuss, but I went ahead and took a bullet for us, guys, and I watched Prison Break Season 5. Michael Scofield is back, or should I say Canyon, whatever the fuck his last name was. Okay. So, in the fourth season... I guess he died. I didn't even make it this far. But I guess he got some disease and died. And they buried a body. And his brother saw him. So how are they bringing him back? I don't know. I don't think they really answer it. We come back to see that he's in a prison, apparently, in Yemen, I want to say. The new hotness. Yemen.
Okay.
And so all the old prison buddies, all these macho bald meatheads, all kind of gather to follow this flimsy evidence and ham-fisted dialogue about like, hey, here's what happened, audience. And basically, they might as well have just turned to the audience and say, this is what happened in previous seasons, and don't question it. We're just going to move forward because we wanted to make another season. It's all really dumb. The storyline is kind of boring. It's all about his brother gathering a crew to fly over there and try and check this prison to see if he's actually in there. Sure enough, he goes and his brother's there, but his brother's going by a different name and doesn't recognize them or doesn't acknowledge them. I don't know.
What if he's a twin? Long lost twin?
Maybe. But they did dig up the grave, and there was no body for him in the grave.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. All the performances,
so bad.
All the performances suck. There was no real interesting hook to either his brother or some doppelganger being in this prison.
Yep.
And I don't care. Like, it's really weird because I watched the first two seasons, and the first season was pretty good. I think I watched the first three seasons.
I know I watched the first two.
Yeah, the second season was the trying to get out, and then the third season they're back in another prison in like
I watched part of the third season. Yeah, I watched part of the Mexico prison.
and they have to break out of yet another prison.
Yeah.
But the first season had some charm to it. It was interesting. It's an escape movie. but or show. This one is just bad. Well, I don't watch it, guys. It, I don't think it's going to get better.
The first season had Peter Stormare and Teabag.
Yeah, yep. Teabag's back in it.
Oh, is he?
And
Peter Stormare has things to do.
Yeah.
He knows better. He might have died at some point.
Oh, man, Robert Knepper's great, though.
Oh, yeah, he certainly hands
and,
it up.
And
yeah.
He's on iZombie, is he not?
Oh, really?
Oh, is he?
He's Blaine's dad.
Oh, okay.
I think that's the same actor.
Well, anyway, my report is I watched it. I was super disappointed. And the Middle East in every show I watch is boring to me. Yeah. I don't know why. It's such a like war-torn area, like in all the depictions that they show, and yet it's also always boring to me.
Here's a question: is the Middle East always in Fox shows?
Yeah, I think so.
Prison Break, 24, Tyrant was an FX show.
Homeland.
Homeland's in Showtime. Okay, I was just wondering.
Those are 24 alumni.
I was just wondering if we were being subtly programmed by Fox to think the Middle East was boring and or dangerous.
Yes.
It's all part of the plan. Yes. Yes. Anyway, let's go ahead and move on to something that was good.
Yeah.
Rick and Morty made a, I want to say like 8 p.m. or 9 p.m. April Fool's reveal that, hey, here's the season 3 premiere that everybody has been jonesing for. We're not going to release the rest of the season until like summer, I think sometime June or July. But they just dropped the first episode on loop.
I didn't know it was on loop. And I sat and watched really kind of hoping that another episode was about to come up because I didn't even realize it was the premiere. I thought I've come in late on this and this has got to be episode 5. And I just jump in where I can and watch.
I saw a little bit of it and I was like, oh shit, I missed it. And then I saw the comments right next to it because there was a big comment thread. And they're like, it'll be back in another 3 minutes, guys. Just wait. And I was like, oh, sweet. I'll just check back in a few minutes.
So amazing. I hate April Fools.
Yes.
I hate April Fools. I hate it. I didn't go on the internet for most of the day.
You have no humor, do you?
I hate pranks.
I'm with you, Randy. I despise this holiday. It's the worst.
This should be the new thing we do for April Fools. Let's give people unanticipated gifts on April Fools. Let's unleash new Rick and Morty. I like that. Let's bring back Szechuan sauce on April Fools next year. I care deeply.
Care now.
I want something good to happen as a surprise every April Fools now. Like that should be our new thing.
So what did you guys think of the return season 3?
I thought it was great. I thought they came back at full steam. I really enjoyed it. It was darker somehow than I even expected for Rick and Morty. Mm-hmm. Especially the way it wraps up with the kind of reestablishing. I mean, I love that it reestablishes the form of the show and some episodic stuff and everything, but that's a long rant from Rick of Morty. You got to Morty. You're just going to do Morty, man. It's this long creeped out rant where he's just like, and this is how it's going to be. I can't wait to see how they deal with Jerry. I know that's not over.
It's such an abusive relationship.
Oh, man.
Jerry's
going to spend some time in divorce.
I love how they've built up the character of Rick to be not just a genius, but the smartest person in the
universe.
In the shared universe.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And how they show his escape, his mind games that he plays with these aliens.
Yep.
And then, like, just blasting between different minds until he gets to another body that I'm like, it's like, fuck it, this one will work.
Yeah.
And I loved his like, and I can't fit all of my brain into your brain, so we're going to ditch my improv skills or the improv class I took and something else. And then immediately, like two scenes later, he's like, oh, the plan went to crap and I can't improv.
I also really like the buildup they've done of the universe, like the Council of Ricks and SEAL Team Rick and
this whole Citadel, all of it.
That Morty is like, gives him a clearance code. It's like, there was such a cool little built up universe in here. And then they're still able to just do ridiculous stuff that makes no sense. Like the Szechuan sauce gag, which was basically a running gag that had nothing to do with anything that had gone before and probably will never be touched on again.
They also give a little bit of a slice of potentially Rick's backstory.
Yes.
And I feel like some of that was still to a degree accurate.
You think?
Like, I think we get to see a person that was presumably his wife.
I assume that really is, his wife.
And he lost her, and he can never abandon again Beth. And I feel like some of that is still true among the shared universes, but how exactly it might have happened or...
Right.
or the how he learned what he learned and what he writes down. I feel like that's where he's like able to just kind of manipulate it.
I think it's all true until Dan Harmon and Justin Roiland decide they want to change it, yep. And then it won't be true anymore.
Yes, yes.
And that's what that's really smart, is that if you want to write it in your fan canon that that's what's going on, then sure, it can be. And he may refer to it later, or he may change his mind and add something completely different in there.
And we don't know. I mean, whatever the next episodic adventure in episode two, they may utterly fuck the world up and yeah. have to walk away from it and go kill two other doppelgangers and take their lives over. And we may be right back to season one.
Yeah.
Just plain as normal.
I mean, as far as the universe that they're in, they still have an Earth that is like royally fucked by the Galactic Federation
coming in
and just like running all over everything.
Yeah.
And then they all had to leave, right?
Yeah.
The Galactic Federation.
Yes, like, yeah. He collapsed their economy. Yeah.
But there's still an Earth that had that sort of impact to it. And that's going to be a different sort of reality that I'm not sure if they're going to want to explore that or if they're going to want to go to a more simplistic model.
Yeah.
At this point, we've established that we care about his sister, Morty's sister.
Summer.
Yeah.
And we care about the parents of this universe.
Yeah.
And so we'll stick with them.
Who is Summer's friend that went off with Bird Person?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And she's now with Phoenix Person?
Phoenix Person.
Is that really what we're going with?
I thought we were going to call him Cyber Phoenix or something.
Cyber Bird. Cyber Bird. Yeah. Phoenix Person?
It is brilliant. I watched this back to back two times and just like kept going, this is so amazing. It's I'm getting back and watch it again next time I see it. I love it. I'm glad. I'm sad I have to wait that many months, but I'm glad to see a little bit of it.
Yeah, that was wonderful.
Now, Making History was a show, Randy, that you wanted us to check back in on since we watched the pilot 3-4 weeks back.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Well, and also, Les was going to be on, and when Les is on, I feel like I need to find a time travel show.
Thank you.
That's pretty cool.
So I watched this. I'd seen the first episode, and then I was not... I think you guys liked it better than I did. Mm. And I was like, I'm probably not going to watch this again. And then I decided to go and watch through. So I watched episodes 2-5, I guess. And at the end of episode 2, I thought, I hate this show. And then after the end of episode 3 or 4, I was like, oh no, this is funny.
It got better and better for me. There was something about episode 1 that I didn't quite like. I don't believe Adam Pally is really in any scene he's in. Like,
no.
There's no stakes for him. Yeah. I like him as a comedic actor, but I've seen him in a couple of movies now, and I don't believe him. He always sounds like he's saying the joke line.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Adam Pally is, and there's a lot of guys like this, you don't cast the sarcastic asshole as the lead.
Yes. And that's where Making History begins to work for me. As the show progressed, the more time they spend on Chris and his girlfriend. Dorothy. Is it? No, Deborah. Deborah.
Deborah.
Revere. Yeah. Like, the more time they spend on the ensemble, the better, because Adam Pally's character, or Dan.
Yeah. Adam Pally's great in Happy Endings. He was great as a supporting character.
I really find it mysterious. That's why he's mainly he and time travel are the reasons I watch this.
You know,
he's just too much of a dumb goober that I'm like, what are you contributing to the trio? Yes. Except he's more of like a foil for them to kind of.
Yeah, all he contributed for a couple of episodes was literally squalling baby freakouts.
Yeah.
And so I was like, man, you've got to find something better to do.
And now that they've sort of gotten into this place that they're going to start using, this is why the turn of what made it started making work is they got to this place of, oh, we're actually going to use this thing for more than just going around and trying to fix what we fucked up. So let's go back to the 90s and fix a childhood trauma of mine.
That one was great.
That was their best episode. Someone needs to be the guy saying, let's use this thing for our own personal gains selfishly. And Adam Pally is perfect for that.
Yeah, I see where they've set some pieces up to go. The show really, it got funnier and funnier until I was laughing out loud by the fourth or fifth episode.
The payoff, okay, the place where I fell in love with this show was the payoff at the end of episode 4 in the 90s, where they go back and Chris, like the ice cream woman gets hit by the car, and the woman gets out, and she's like, why would you let this happen? And Chris just tears off running.
Yep.
I died laughing. I'm like, okay, you guys got it. That's cynical and hilarious, and I love it.
Well, I thought it was kind of weird the first three episodes, because it starts off, you know, they mess up the American Revolution. Yeah. Second episode is them fixing the American Revolution, yeah. But Chris and Adam Pally's character are enemies now, right?
Yeah,
like
yeah.
They're not really talking, or at least on Chris's part. He's right. Like, I'm trying to get tenure or whatever. And then the third episode is kind of like...
They glossed right over, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, well, I thought like they weren't really working together, because the third episode's where he's the girlfriend courting thing, mm-hmm. But he's... Chris is trying to get tenure, and
yeah.
and they leave that one where like they're not buddies. And then yeah. All of a sudden in the fourth one they're going on adventures. I feel like there was an episode missed or something.
It might have been
something's out of order. Or something was missed. Yeah,
yeah. Because like, did they miss some sort of story plot there?
Or maybe they had another fourth episode that was also about the American Revolution. They cut it because they realized that was a boring setting to go back to three times, much less four.
Probably. I love that they still went back just to see John Adams, or John Hancock and Sam Adams.
Sam Adams, yeah.
Just because
yeah.
those two Coopers.
They're great. Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, going back to the entire setting, I don't really need it. I mean, it'd be great to see Brett Gelman pop up in some other timeline. Yeah.
A little bit of it goes a long way. Like, if he just goes back to ask them questions for like 5 minutes, that's great.
Yeah.
But like, the more time they spent back there, I'm like, you have a time machine. Don't only go back to 1770s.
Well, every once in a while, he's going to have to go see his in-laws. Or whatever, if he makes this work.
I
was very surprised at how quickly they got past the American Revolution plot, because as I was with you, I mean, it worked, but it kind of had a Last Man on Earth moment for me of like, something has to give in this.
Yes.
And it's another Lord and Miller show. It, you know, something's got to give in this for it to go somewhere. But yeah, I did feel like suddenly Chris just didn't care about, or was like, well, I'm screwed on tenure, whatever, fine.
Yeah, yeah. That's pretty much what happened. Yeah. Oh man, and Chris shooting his best English buddy with a cannonball.
Oh god. Yeah, no, you did that. You shot him. No,
yeah, that was you.
That was good. And then the last episode they did with Capone, where Capone was the thing I like about making history that I think could really work for them is showing that the guys in history are just assholes like everybody else.
Yeah.
Like Capone being basically a whack job who's lonely. His whole long rant about, oh, here's your excuse for why I shouldn't kill you. Oh, you didn't have two tickets? The reason Capone's a murderous psycho is because he's mad his friends are always going really and doing petty. Things without him. Yeah. That was a great gag.
I love Deborah's constant attempts to reboot women's history.
Yes.
And that, she tries at almost every opportunity. Yeah. She tries something of like, no, I did the ride. This has to stand. I have to go down in history. No. We'll tell everyone I did it.
Yeah. So I'm liking it, I guess.
Me too.
The more it goes, and I agree with you guys, if it keeps to a little bit more of a playful formula of going back to different things and having fun with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, you know what song that I haven't heard in like 20 years, been stuck in my head ever since?
The Cher song?
Mm-hmm. You've Got to Live and Learn.
Oh.
That 90s song, You've Got to Live and Learn, that they play in the intro of them mowing in, that song has been in my head. And all I know is the chorus, but it's been in my head for like, oh, I don't know, 3-4 days.
Well, iZombie.
Yes.
Is back. What do you think, Randy?
Am I the only one watching this?
No, I love this show. I'm so happy it's back. Oh, like, man. Finally, there's a zombie show on TV.
And the...
Take that, Walking Dead.
What's interesting is every episode, every season, they've sort of turned a little bit, and they've added a little bit more to the characters. But now that everybody's in on the secret...
The mythology of the show is outstanding.
And the stakes are higher. Like, they're talking about a zombie takeover of Seattle in a way that's like, that's not the threat.
Yeah, no, this is an inevitable paradigm shift in the show, but it is not the threat. You just know that this is going to change at some point with the dynamic. But yeah, this show has always leaned on both incredibly paper-thin bad puns that I love them for, but while also giving me character, like, I love Ravi.
Oh, yeah, Ravi's great.
The characters are really great. Like, I actually like Liv and Major's relationship
and
Ravi and Peyton. They did more with Blaine than I ever expected them to pull off with that character.
That guy's great. I loved him on Alias, and I think he's fantastic here. And the way they did the thing with him where he was the bad guy, but they want to keep the actor around, so they gave him the amnesia.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so like, he knows he did bad things, but he doesn't remember them. That was a great way to do that, because I've seen that done. It usually pisses me off.
Yeah. No, this.
And Andrea Savage as the new sort of boss of this military company, I love her because she's very matter of fact. I mean, Von Duclark from last season was a great character.
But finding out that she's zombie and that Fillmore, well, and once again, bad pun. I mean, you have Liv Moore, Fillmore Graves is the company.
Yes.
This is the military contractor that's all. And we got the stinger at the end of the pilot episode. Well, not stinger, but the last scene of the pilot episode. Yeah. Majors finally got a job where they don't care that he used to be, or that he was publicly revealed as a chaos killer.
Right. Yeah.
Because last season he got outed as being the guy going around rounding up zombies. Only nobody knows that zombies exist. Zombies, so right. It just looks like he killed a bunch of rich people.
Yeah. 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 The only thing I'll say about iZombie, and the problem is I can't always keep track of who all the plots are. Like, the Chaos Killer thing got a little fuzzy for me. The Mr. Boss war with Blaine got a little fuzzy for me. Like, the Cure, there's so much story.
There's so much going on.
That sometimes I get a little lost, and I would love to have the time to rewatch this and really enjoy all the work they're putting into it. But it's really, really good. It's really funny. It's very clever. I like the way they do their show of the week kind of thing.
Well, and Robert Knepper, the actor that played Teabag in Prison Break, he is back now. I can't remember his Blaine's henchman that takes over the operation. The little guy that takes over the operation for a little while. He has stolen Blaine's father and is thawing him out somewhere. And they're going to go after Blaine.
Yeah, that's the other thing. They do great stuff with zombies. Like, they know, like, the idea of just like, oh, he's frozen. I'll just thaw him out with a hairdryer and then he'll wake up. Like, they do a lot of cool, fun stuff with zombies, and of course, Liv's like brain smoothies that she makes and that kind of thing.
Oh yeah, her whole Hannibal style little food montages are
So the last show that we want to discuss is the show that actually caught me by surprise. 13 Reasons Why just sort of popped up on Netflix. Another one that just dropped in.
I wouldn't have watched this if you had not recommended it, Grant.
Same.
Because there's so many things that drop on Netflix. If I've not heard a lick of anything about this, I don't know that I would have just walked into it.
Well, it's based on a YA novel from what I hear.
Yeah, and I didn't know that either. The only thing I knew initially was that I went to the movie theater to see Get Out, and in the pre-show for Get Out, like before the actual like trailers start, there was like a behind the scenes making like this ABC family seeming show that Selena Gomez was producing called 13 Reasons Why. And I wasn't really paying attention, but I was like, oh, I think this is that Selena Gomez show. I don't really know why I decided to check it out. Maybe I saw some headline that said something like about it being pretty good. So I went ahead and checked this out. And the premise of this show, for a lot of you who probably haven't watched this, because I don't know if a lot of people have heard about it, is that this girl kills herself, and she's this high school girl. And before she kills herself, she records 7 tapes, 13 front and back parts of these cassette tapes that she gives in a box to 13 different individuals that went to high school with her, and they are the 13 reasons why she killed herself. This is sort of her suicide note in cassette form, and it is explaining what each of them contributed to ultimately her killing herself. Just a heads up, we are going to go into spoilers for this entire season, so if you haven't watched it yet, I just want to say go watch it. I think it's really great. And that's my quick review. But otherwise, here we're going to go spoil some stuff.
The device of this, it works so well. It gave several moments of reveal for me. Initially, when Clay, the main kid who's kind of our proxy for the show, as he's listening to the tapes, I started the show thinking that he and Tony, the character that gives him the tapes, and I thought maybe they were the only two that had heard them.
Right.
Yeah, right.
And you go, and I went on like that for a little while. And then you slowly start to realize that she didn't disseminate these tapes to 13 people. She gave them to one person with instructions to pass them along through a chain of people. So you start to realize that there's some group of these people who've heard all of this before you.
Yeah.
And seeing that dawn on Clay, like seeing that dawn on the character that
he's not alone.
He's not alone. In fact,
they know what he's.
And they know way
to.
More than him. The thing that probably infuriated me most for the first 5 or 6 episodes was that Clay did not sit down and listen to all of them in a row.
Yes.
Listen to your fucking tape. But
it's an aggravating plot device that they had to do.
And it does eventually. Just accept it, right? And it does eventually really make sense to me. Like, if anything, I was glad eventually that they did it that way because it felt far more believable. For this high school kid to know that eventually he's on a tape.
Yeah.
And he doesn't know what he did to this girl.
He's going slowly because he's having a lot of difficulty processing this.
They also do a spectacular job of showing these kids have stress breakdowns in high school.
Yeah.
He stops showering. Yeah. And people start noticing that he's just not bathing. Yeah. And there were several little things of Clay flipping out, yeah. but also...
his panic sweats and his delusions that he seems to have.
By the way, one of the most clever things they did, since they do a lot of flashbacks to her when she was alive, in the first episode, he gets in a bike accident and he has a Band-Aid on his head. So you've got this instant...
Memento style. Yeah.
Instant visual of when you're in flashback and when you're not. I mean, they also
eat warm light, cool light.
They also do it with lighting and all that kind of thing. But I like that there's that instant recognizable, like you're never confused as to whether they're in a flashback or not.
They do so many beautiful, not just match cuts, but very subtle effects sometimes where a Clay walks past Clay. Or the mom leans forward. You never see a break in the actual background of the scene or anything where she's in the store. You see the girl take the razor blades, Hannah take the razor blades, and then you see the mom check in stock. And for a moment, I mean, it just flows right between the times and makes the jump. I was watching it several times going, that was a beautiful effect that doesn't seem like a CG effect.
They got some incredible directors for this. They were they're pulling some of these like masterclass documentarians and directors in to film this. And it really shows. It's beautifully shot as a consistent visual.
Yes. Yeah. The final episode where they do depositions at one point.
Okay.
And then the final episode, it takes on a more documentarian style sometimes because every once in a while they cut to the camera that is that the lawyers have set up.
Yeah.
And there's a classiness to it. I mean, there's a sure-handed classiness to the whole series. They knew what they were doing. I think somebody on Facebook had said that it was a little after school special, and I would agree with that. It does feel like the world's longest.
Yeah.
It can't not on the subject matter.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's the
best that I've ever seen.
It never feels like it's pandering. Doesn't shy away from the realness. Like, in fact, it fully embraces the most fucked up aspects of this, and it forces you to watch it to the point where you feel that pain.
Yeah.
And the most important thing I think about this for me was I really truly believed in the relationship between the two lead characters,
yes. mm-hmm.
Clay and Hannah, played by Dylan Minnette and
that kid was in Let Me In. He's been in a handful of other things. He plays young versions of actors. I think.
Yeah, Dylan Minnette is a character that I swear I've seen that actor a bunch of places.
He's Jack Shepard's son in Lost.
Yeah, that's right.
But for whatever,
he's in Goosebumps.
I've seen him in a bunch of stuff, but I didn't recognize when I looked through his credits. I'm like, nope, that's not where I thought I knew him from. So I think he just looks like somebody.
Yeah, well, he was in Awake. That's probably the one that you really do remember.
The closest
him from.
To, but I thought he was in something else.
Catherine Langford, however, who plays Hannah, the girl who kills herself, she's like brand new to this unknown. From Australia. And how great her of a accent is that?
Is amazing. Like she's from Perth. She dropped her accent completely.
Yeah, and you watch they do a little after like a 30-minute
at the end of it
30-minute what do you call it featurette I guess afterwards
nice
like for people that probably need to cope after watching this because this is misery
there are
13 episodes it's really heavy
two episodes
to watch.
That give a precursor trigger warning card at the start
okay. mm-hmm.
And one of them is the most dead-eyed terrible. Realistic filming of a rape I think I've ever seen.
Oh man,
and it was horrible. I mean, and I'm watching it going, shit. I know people that need to see this that I'm not sure could watch it.
Yeah,
it is brutal. Yeah, and it does not shy away from it. But like those two performances, like they have to do a lot of work where they aren't talking as well. A lot of just like showing emotion in their face and how well they do that. I bought into every single bit of it, and those two were crucial. These are better performances than I see from a lot of seasoned actors.
Well, in general, I think this is a really talented young cast. Like, I like all the different characters. I think they all look young.
I don't feel like any of these folks are in their late 20s playing high school kids.
Right.
They're all.
There's
they're
a lot
all
of great performances. Courtney? Is that the
Courtney's great?
She does great. The whole scene at the. At the cemetery was amazing.
Oh yeah. And Sherry, her friend.
Yeah.
There were just a lot of good twists to this. When you're watching Clay slowly make his way through the tapes and there's everybody else around him has their own reasons for what they want him to do or not do, but they all know more than him.
Yeah.
And watching him react and them go, man, you're reacting at tape 5. Please listen to the next tape.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a few things that when you kind of take in the show in whole, I kind of go,
those are things that you need to do to string me, the viewer, along. And I kind of accept that they did these little cheats with, like, how people react to Clay, I think, in particular.
Yeah. There's only a couple of times, though, where I was yelling at a character to just say it, like, where there's a misunderstanding, but it's only because the person who's supposedly telling you information doesn't actually tell you the information, and then... So you didn't react badly, they never told you. There was a moment where Hannah's standing, talking to Clay at a locker, and... it's the car wreck.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he thinks she's making it about him, or making it about herself, which is a fully reasonable high school argument to have.
But she's mopey about it.
Well, and he thinks that this is an accident she had nothing to do with. She was not there. She did not know the people. She wasn't that good of friends with Jeff. He doesn't know that she was literally at the scene 30 minutes prior.
Uh-huh.
And is the car, or is, was involved in how there's no stop sign at that thing, which caused, like... but Clay doesn't know this, and she doesn't tell him, and he is callous and says, "Why are you making it all about you? You didn't even know the guy," and shines her on, and it's a brutal moment for her that goes on the tapes, but it's entirely a misunderstanding because she doesn't finish her fucking sentence.
Right.
I think one of the most important things they show in this show is that, you know, she's the narrator in a way of a lot of what's going on. And yet she's not a fully reliable narrator. I mean, for the most part, you can take what she's saying as the truth, but it's the truth how she saw it.
She's emotionally subjective.
Yeah, they continue to like emphasize this because then it makes you not just appreciate like how you treat people, which I think was a very important message for them to get across, especially to high school kids who would probably watch this show.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that that also reinforces how you look at all these other people that we're quick to kind of judge, and in particular how Clay is reacting in that scene with the locker, like him pushing her aside. He's more angry than he's ever been about something, and that's like the sensitivity about like how you should talk to him about that is something that probably can get like washed over. But I think that you end up recognizing that, like, he's not just being a jerk there. He also doesn't know how to cope with
something.
It was a fully
true scene. It didn't feel like they all got reduced to one note, like, where, okay, in this scene, you're mean to her. Like,
this isn't Archie or Riverdale or
Archie. Yeah. Although Reggie is in it.
Yeah. Reggie plays Zach. So there's a little bit of a crossover here. I mean, I don't know. This just stuck with me for a few days after, too.
I've had depression issues my whole life and had a really shitty go of it in junior high and high school.
This resonate?
And this resonated. And particularly because I didn't get checked into lockers and stuff. Like, there was stuff I saw at high school that was worse than what I was going through.
Yeah.
But it didn't change how I was feeling about... I mean, it didn't change what it felt like in my brain or how crazy it felt. And so watching her kind of overreact to things that happen. And a couple of characters rightly point out, this is stuff that happens to everyone in high school. I'm sorry that it's happening to you, and it shouldn't, and high school shouldn't be like this.
Yeah.
But it is to everyone, and we all survive. It is not... I mean, a couple of characters rightly point that out, and not in a not to be cruel.
Yeah.
But it got me thinking, watching the whole thing and going, I've exactly like that. Towards the end, she starts talking about just not feeling anything or wanting everything to stop, and there was a whole lot of it where I was going, oh, that's whole phrases out of my brain at 15 or 16.
I couldn't help but identify with like two or three different characters at different points.
I actually have recommended this to a couple of people already. I had a coworker who had to attend a funeral for a suicide last week. So a friend of her daughter's who's in seventh grade, and so I immediately was like, you should probably watch this. Because another thing they do in the series, suicide looks like, and they mention this in the series, suicide looks like an infectious disease when you map it.
Yeah.
And the CDC will treat it like an infectious disease because something perversely puts suicide on the table as an option when it happens in your group. And even though everybody's mad about the suicide and nobody wants suicide, it's weirdly on the table now.
Yeah.
And so you usually end up, or too often you end up with somebody else in the tangential group trying to kill himself or killing
himself. Well, the other thing is interesting is that this is really dark subject material. It's really, really, heavy stuff. But it's at no point did I feel like I need to turn this off and stop watching. It is very watchable and compelling.
I mean, there's certain parts right near the end where I'm like,
They end episode 10 with a narrative move that I felt like was specifically designed to make it possible for me to put to do 11, 12, and 13. It might be the end of episode 11, actually. Mm-hmm. It makes it possible for me to do 12 and 13.
With Clay on the bike going like.
Well, Clay and Tony. Oh, no, no. The episode before that. Tony. Clay finally just point blank asks Tony, am I the final straw? Who killed Hannah? And Tony looks, yes.
Yeah.
And it's brutal. Wow. And you're rolling into the last tape. Like, this is it.
Oh man.
The episode with Clay was by far my favorite. I thought that was such a beautiful episode. Yeah. His tape. And I think that was episode 10. But
yeah, I think it is 10.
I mean, watching that, I read this article. I want to say it was off of Vox doing a review of the show. And they were talking about comparisons between the book and the show. And, you know, I'm not familiar with the book. I guess it won some Pulitzer or whatever.
I have a friend who said it was great.
Yeah. Well, what they talk about is in the book, the contrast between that and how they tackle Clay in this is Clay's actually a fully realized character in this, rather than just like a vessel for the reader.
Right.
And he has a personality that I guess Dylan Minnette does a great job of giving life to, but also culpability. I think that they exonerate him basically in the book, and here they don't.
Yeah.
Like we know what happens in the tape, but he still accepts ownership for his role, even though.
Well, those two things seem linked to me because, if you're not building up the character, then you can't hang things on him as effectively. Whereas you can hang something on this version of the character because we've seen his depth in the different versions of him. We've seen that he has dimensions.
I mean, it's a mark of maturity of the character that like and responsible messaging for anyone watching that like. He may have gotten absolution, but he doesn't accept that, and rightfully so to an extent, like because it takes a village.
Yeah, a spectacular job of showing the nuance that no one person said anything that directly, like them alone did the maybe Bryce, but them alone did this. But any one of them could have stopped it. If any one of them had remained friends with her, they could have likely stopped it. That there were just. There were a series of moments that all went wrong in a row. And it's easy enough. Like, I think she even makes a point. Hannah makes a point of, you know, if you wonder what the last few signs of this look like, they don't look like anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was a line that actually really stuck with me too.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know, man. I've fallen into watching like three or four things lately that all dealt with suicide very heavily.
Yeah, there's a little bit of that in the air right now.
Yeah, I watched this movie also on Netflix. I have not watched
The Discovery yet.
The Discovery deals with it. Mm-hmm. I was listening to this podcast.
Don't give it away.
That deals with it. And
that's already been spoiled for me, actually.
Oh, okay.
I've been, just like a couple different shows and I watched Louis C.K.'s comedy special.
Dude, if he kills himself at the end of that, I'm going to be so mad.
He doesn't kill himself.
He doesn't, because I saw that show live, but it is amazing. That's, okay. Is
he does a big bit on it,
Is this
too.
The show where he starts with abortion?
Yeah.
Okay, I saw that live. And Louis C.K. is fearless and able to do he's able to do stuff in comedy that no one should be able to touch. And his take on suicide is so matter of fact and darkly hilarious, but also really, really just
Louis's episode on suicide, which was around when I had to quit watching Louis.
Yeah. He's got a handle on things. That's really interesting.
Yeah. It was just, what's going
on? It's in the air.
I even watched an episode of The Mick and it had a plot point about suicide.
I mean, America's getting great again, Grant. Why would anybody want to leave?
I feel like that's a contributing factor, right? It's like everyone like wrote all these stories or decided to like greenlight all this stuff during that 2016 election. They're like, fuck everything.
They might have been like, you know, no matter how this turns out, we probably want people to remind people they shouldn't just go kill themselves.
So after several years of nothing but dystopia, future films, films. Yeah. Now it's just Suicide Squad.
Yeah, they're like, look, just don't do this. Please don't do it. I know you want to. Please don't do it.
Anyway, we want to end on a dour note. Hey, listeners, we love you. We love all of you listeners. And watch these shows and learn a valuable lesson on your value, I guess.
Although, you're not going to learn a lot of lessons from making history, probably.
No, watch some Rick and Morty.
Going to teach the wrong lessons.
Yes.
Watch Rick and Morty and go, I shouldn't be like Rick.
And Grant learned a lesson for you, which is don't watch Prison Break.
Yeah, hey, that'll be super depressing. That's probably the most depressing thing I watched. All right, guys. Well, let's go ahead and call it there. And we will be back on our Patreon episode talking about, maybe we'll talk about a podcast or something. I don't know. We'll discuss some interesting stuff. If you guys want to check us out over there, that is patreon.com/TV Dudes. Once again, we want to thank all of you guys listening. And until next week,
TV Dudes out.
The TV Dudes is an independently run podcast and a member of the Permanent Record Podcast Network. We are exclusively listener supported. If you'd like to help us out, please go to patreon.com/TV Dudes. You can like us on Facebook and Twitter at TV Dudes and help us out on iTunes by giving us a 5-star rating and writing a review. To find out more about us, go to thetvdudes.com and permanentrcrd.com. I'm Grant Davis. Thanks for listening.